This is Will's Band of the Week for May 24th, 2015. Hello and welcome to another edition of Will's Band of the Week. This is Will, along with Barrett, live in studio.
Good evening.
And Chris, live in studio.
Here I am.
You know, we were just live in studio a week ago, but
we were.
No one ever heard the brilliant conversation that we had.
I know.
I feel like maybe I should have the audio recorder on my phone running, just in case. Like
yeah, a, so like there at least be something.
Yeah.
That
should
a good
be a backup.
Idea.
See, the problem is
we need redundancy.
This software that we use to record this, it looks like everything is totally fine, right? You look at the screen, everything looks perfect, and then, you try to save it, and then it rejects you.
Right.
Yeah.
When you got the error message that there's too much porn on your computer, and that it's jamming it up, I think that was probably the problem, so.
We'll have no comment on that.
Remember that one?
You know, you can stream it now. You don't have to.
It doesn't have to be saved? Oh, that's great.
Right. So, like, 98% of your hard drive doesn't have to be.
One thing I will mention, remember when I was picking out a song, and rather than saying, I'm going to select, I kind of went about it in a roundabout way, super professional, and then you guys were so taken aback when at the end of my little, you know, statement, you're like, is that the song you're playing? Remember
right,
that?
Yeah, because it was so
awesome.
Smooth. I know, and it was lost forever.
I don't even.
And it was so
I don't
smooth.
Think I could do it again.
We had good jokes. I should have written them all down.
We did have good jokes.
So people know what we're talking about. We recorded an hour and 15 podcast last week, and it went up in flames. Computer jammed up.
Yep.
In hindsight, though, some of the stuff that was said, we might have gotten in trouble with the FCC.
Because they regulate podcasts?
Yeah, maybe.
Now?
Maybe.
Yeah. It got pretty crazy.
Like Dick Cheney's at home listening to podcasts?
Yes.
Clamping down on our civil rights?
Didn't they appoint him the director of podcast monitoring?
Yes, of indie music podcast monitoring.
Yeah.
Specifically.
I'm sure he'd be fine without a podcast. He's probably a rocker.
Which is why I think this podcast is brought to you by Halliburton this week. I think that's...
Yes.
Next week will be Blackwater.
Yeah.
Yep.
We actually do have a new sponsor.
Do we? Oh, we do?
Yeah. Somebody's at the door.
Mm.
No, it's a spam telephone call. So just ignore it.
Oh, okay. Is that Adnan Syed again?
This lady doesn't know how to this lady can't pronounce anything. Listen. Listen to this. Somebody picked it up. It was a call from Telefund Indiana or something.
MailChimp.
Lady can't pronounce it.
Yeah.
Like she can't pronounce MailChimp.
MailChimp. Right.
American jokes.
Yeah.
Yep.
Because we have an international audience.
We do.
That we're about to get to, right?
Yeah.
Should we get to that now?
You set me up for a little segue there.
I'm the master. I'm like in volleyball. I just set you up.
Yeah, serve it up. Set me up like that.
I think Perfect. Barrett had something interesting to say, though, and we just blew by it.
Wait, what were you saying?
Yeah.
No, I was going to mention our sponsor.
Oh, yes.
And then Chris served it up to me.
Right.
So I can knock it out of the park here.
Because it all comes together.
It's brought to you this week by Stiegel Beer, which is from Salzburg, Austria.
That's right.
So you might be wondering, why would he go out and get that, right?
Austrian beer, right?
But we got a nice letter from Alex.
Felix. Felix Momborg.
Made quite an impression on Barrett.
Yeah.
There's an X in it.
From Xavier.
I want to fix that.
Xavier McDaniel.
Make up for it, Barrett.
Fix that? All right. We got a nice letter from... now I can't. Now it's Felix, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, we got a nice letter from Felix, who's a listener in Salzburg, Austria.
And also a cat, which is amazing because they're not known for their typing.
Not at all. or for their ability to listen to human voices and you know, have thoughts about things. But yeah, he sent a real nice letter, and it's the kind of thing that really, I don't know, maybe you can't even imagine how, what's the word I'm looking for? It's just really gratifying, isn't it, to read that?
I'm not a fan of the word gratifying.
No?
Being gratified, I don't know, it just has some weird connotations. But yes,
you are,
it's very
sick.
It's very touching. It was very nice of Felix to do that. I mean, we were talking on the way over here how much time it must have taken him for you know, some random guy in Australia to write us, and how
Austria.
Did I say that?
You said Australia.
Oh. Yeah, whatever. I was thinking of our boy Nicholas. For a guy in Austria, pardon me.
Yeah.
I'm sitting here drinking a beer that was probably brewed within miles from his house.
Mm-hmm.
So I know that.
So, yeah, because after I read it, I emailed him back and said, I mentioned that we went there for our honeymoon, which is like, it was in 1993. So there's a pretty decent chance that he wasn't born yet. I have no idea. He didn't say how old he was, but he did mention that he hopes that he still likes music when he's old like we are. You guys catch that part?
So on your honeymoon, you like toured some concentration camps? And
no, well,
like
we
that.
Did. We did in Munich.
Yeah.
But then in Salzburg, we...
That was the high point of the marriage.
Yeah. Salzburg was really, really, really nice.
Yeah?
Super cool. I think it was my favorite of the cities that we went to on that trip. And we had the Stiegel there and another thing called Augustiner.
Oh, I think I've seen that.
Well, there's one that's made in Munich, and then this one is I don't think you can get it.
So I've seen the Munich one then.
Right. But it's in this old castle type thing, and Felix said he used to go there with his friends and stuff, so there you go.
You know, the only time growing up, the only time I got out of the country was a trip to Austria and Germany when I was 15. That was cool. We went to Innsbruck, where they had the Olympics.
Yes.
And then we went to Munich.
Mm-hmm.
That was cool.
Did you go to Dachau in Munich?
Nope, don't think so.
Yeah.
Can you do when I was in college, everybody did the whole, well, let's tour Europe on the rail and stay at hostels and all that kind of stuff. Do you even do that anymore? Like with the internet, do you just do like Airbnb stuff? And
I don't know. Good question.
I mean, what do you
I bet
do?
You they still have the hostels.
Yeah?
Yeah. I bet you could.
Yeah. There's one in Madison, like on Butler Street. You know?
A hostel?
Mm-hmm.
We've stayed at that place down in Chicago. That is a hostel. Grant and I have stayed there a couple times.
Hmm.
It's right by the Blue Line train stop, and you can go down there, and you know, it's pretty reasonable.
I've stayed in some pretty hostel places down there too.
Yeah, a different kind of hostel.
Yeah,
yeah.
But the other thing that Felix did is mention a band for me and you guys to listen to that would be kind of challenging.
Right. Have you listened to it yet?
I did, but I'm not prepared really to talk about it. So I'm just going to kind of tease it.
You will not render judgment.
No comments.
Yeah. So we'll have to we'll get back to that next week. But it's good lifting music. That's all.
That's what you've been looking for lately, right?
Yeah. Got to get stuff to get me fired up.
Well, thanks for the email, Felix.
Yeah, that was
really cool.
Now we have an Austria. Bureau.
We should have right. What about that?
Yeah.
One more comment. When I emailed him, I said Guten Tag, Felix. So he took that to mean that I spoke a little bit of German.
No. Oh.
So he thought I'd be able to listen to the lyrics of this stuff, but I don't really know any German except for Guten Morgen, Guten Tag. You know.
Yeah.
What else? Zwei Bier.
I don't know. You just go on Google Translate now, and you can write them a whole email.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You know what I've found to be fun, because I'm a writer and I write columns. Like you go on Google Translate, put your column in there, translate it to another language, and then translate it back to
that
English.
That is great. I've done that before too, and it's funny, right?
Because the colloquialisms and stuff don't really translate back, and so it's like
yep,
right.
So, I was riding a goat, and...
Right. Yeah, I've done. You should do it like you can run it through a few different languages too.
You should do it like three times. Like go to German, back to English, and then take that and put it in like German? Japanese or something, and then back to English, and then see what it looks like at the end. That'd be fun. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, all right. Okay. Next, we have Chris with a live report. If that doesn't get you in the mood for a live report, I don't know what will.
And especially from who I went to go see.
Exactly. Let's hear about it, Chris.
I went to go see a couple weeks ago. I went to Milwaukee to see Sufjan Stevens. Everybody's favorite folk songster and occasional electronica dabbler. And, you know, obviously his new album, we talked about it on the podcast. Everybody likes it. And yeah, the show was really great. I mean, he basically just essentially played the album, not front to back in order, but he played the whole album and then dipped a little bit into some of the older stuff. Actually, a lot of the stuff on Michigan, which I thought was interesting. Hmm. And a couple from Seven Swans, not a lot from Illinois.
Hmm.
You guys know what an enthusiast of the Illinois album I am. Mm-hmm. But
you were yelling Illinois at the top of your lungs, right?
Just, yes. All the Illinois songs. That's what I yelled. Play the hits.
What did he do for percussion?
I mean, he had a drummer. I mean, it was a full band.
A lot of his newer songs have like really sparse percussion, like not like full drum set kind of percussion. So yeah. I was just wondering.
Yep. He had a female who multi-instrumentalist and, you know, pretty much if you play in his band, you have to play a bunch of different stuff. So, you know, they'd switch That's off cool. and he'd jump over on the piano sometimes because on his album, you know, there are some kind of spare piano songs. But yeah, I mean, during the show, I mean, the new album is a lot about his childhood and his relationship with his mother who, you know, had mental problems and then died just a few years ago. And so during the show, during a lot of the songs, they were showing home movies, his old home movies behind him with him as a little child. And I think it added a little weight to the songs that are already pretty heavy. At least in terms of topics. And, you know, you wouldn't think, I mean, this is kind of a really spare album, but the last song on the album, Blue Buckets of Gold, it was, you know, 20 minutes long, and it just kind of built into a crescendo and until it was just these, you know, pounding drums and electric noises and stuff. And it was seriously one of the loudest concerts that, you know, moments in a concert that I've ever heard. Like, I felt like my head was about to explode when it was just, you know, pounding. It's like I've never seen Godspeed You Black Emperor, but I imagine during those moments that it would be something like that. So, I mean, it was an absolutely great show, and it was sold out. So he's, you know, if his audience still seems to be growing. I mean, I know his last album, Age of Ads, was critically acclaimed, but I don't think it drew him a whole lot of new listeners, but I think this new one has.
Not by this critic, it wasn't.
You know what's great, though? 10 years from now, people will ask you, what are the loudest concerts you've ever seen? You'll say, Metallica and Sufjan Stevens.
Yeah. Well, I saw Ted Nugent at Cobalt in 74. That was pretty loud.
That was loud.
Then there was The Who at Riverfront. That was loud. And then Sufjan Stevens in Milwaukee in 15. That was nuts.
The one thing I noticed about him, he's like big and muscular now.
Really?
Yeah, he's like a big muscular guy. So it kind of makes me feel a little bit like maybe some of this stuff is all a put on. Because I kind of like my indie rockers to kind of be sad.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously he has his life somewhat together if he's eating right. and exercising regularly.
I mean, he was like a super wuss before, right?
Right. So now he's like, you know, he's wearing a tight t-shirt and he's up there and he's like pretty big.
Yeah. Huh.
So I'm like, he's obviously, you know, he's got things put together.
Indie rockers are supposed to be built like Bradford Cox, right?
Oh, boy.
Yes.
Yeah.
They're supposed to, like
maybe not chest. Quite that thin, but yeah.
Built like 13-year-old boys.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So it makes me think that he might have gotten things figured out and that maybe in the same way, like, it was all put on that he was going to do an album of 50 states. that a lot of this might be put. He might be playing a persona at this point.
If he tried to, you know, people try to run a marathon in every state. I can kind of see doing that, you know. I mean, I won't do that, but I can see why people do. But if Sufjan Stevens tried to do the album about every state, if he got to like state number 28, it would be like, oh God, what's next? Right. Pennsylvania. Oh God.
Why doesn't he just put out like a triple album with one song for every
state?
Yeah,
he could do that.
Yeah.
That'd be cool. What would he do about Wisconsin?
The Wisconsin song would be awesome, right?
It'd be about the Packers, of course.
Tribute to Bon Iver.
And there's nothing better than Packer music.
Oh, I know.
Some of the worst music I've ever heard in my life is devoted to like the Weisenheimers.
The Weisenheimers.
Oh, no, that's good stuff.
Oh, my God.
The Go Pack Go song.
Then you've got, what about the Happy Schnapps combo?
G-Force music?
Yeah. Yeah, it's, well, there you go. He's got a field that's ripe for somebody to make a good song.
Listen,
a good Packers song.
Oh, boy.
They have it on Spotify.
Ah.
Well, there's a town in Wisconsin. It's not quite as big as LA.
Not quite.
We got something.
There you go.
That is so embarrassing.
I think I'm actually sterile now.
I feel
that
like...
That was so bad.
You know, like, when you do something really dumb and you just sort of like, you feel this wave of shame wash over your body? That's how I felt. I felt ashamed that that was, that that existed.
I'm just amazed they have that on Spotify. That's great.
Wow.
It's called Go You Packers Go.
But that would seem like... You know, if you're going to make one song about Wisconsin, it would obviously be the most obvious thing. It'd be about beer, or cheese, or, you know, all the Germans and Austrians that moved here. Yes. Yeah. Jeffrey Dahmer or something.
Jeffrey Dahmer.
Yep.
There's lots of good song title possibilities.
There's a Katy Perry song that actually talks about Jeffrey Dahmer.
Really?
Yeah. Where there's a, there's like a rap interlude, and he talks about there's a girl that he likes, and she'll eat your heart out like Jeffrey Dahmer. Which seems to be weird in a Katy Perry song.
Yeah. Hopefully that's like a metaphorical thing, right?
Not literal.
Right. But
this is, I was thinking about this, like, though, I was in an airport. And when you go to airports in each city, like, there's always the one store that kind of boils the whole city down into everything about that city in one store. And, of course, in Mitchell Airport in Milwaukee, it's always like, hey, cheeseheads and Packer stuff and cows. And so you have these, like, these rich states with all these complex people and, you know, all these traditions and everything. And an airport store will just boil it down to, like, the most obvious stuff.
Right.
Yeah. At least in Seattle, they have the Sub Pop Records store. That's cool.
Yeah.
But you're right. That's what it is in most places.
So if they did one song about Wisconsin, I'm afraid it would be something like that.
Yeah, it would.
I always like it, though, when Wisconsin gets name-checked. You know that there's a English beat song called I Am Your Flag? Remember that song? It wasn't on... It must have been a B-side or something. But, yeah, they mention Wisconsin in there, which is kind of cool.
At some point, I wrote a post for my newspaper, the five best songs about Wisconsin.
Wow.
And it was Milwaukee, Here We Come from Dolly Parton.
Okay. I remember.
The Weisenheimers were number one, obviously.
Obviously. Oh, my God. <It's> so terrible.
What else is there?
There's
like somebody had a song. Maybe this is it, like, about the beer that made Milwaukee famous. Is that the one that you just...
Oh, Jerry Lee Lewis had What Made Milwaukee Famous Made a Fool Out of Me.
Okay.
It's about drinking beer.
That's probably a... Was that on your post? Or was
it
that
was. It was number two, good. I believe. Actually, if you want to cut it here and go to the post, you could probably find it.
Okay, we found Chris's post. So let's hear the best songs about Wisconsin, Chris.
Drum roll, number five, Ella Fitzgerald's My Cousin in Milwaukee.
From 1959.
Yes, which is a Gershwin song that she recorded. Let's see, number four, the song Kimia Dawson from The Moldy Peaches. You may recall her songs from the movie Juno. And there's the song Tire Swing mentions that she's heading down to Madison to go visit somebody in Madison. So there's that. Number three, I put Smoking Pope's Welcome to Janesville.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's kind of about being in the city of Janesville when the GM plant is moving out and how desperate things are there.
When we went and saw them in Chicago, weren't they playing in support of that?
I believe they were. I believe that was, that was, they may have actually been debuting the song at the time. Number two, Jerry Lee Lewis's What Made Milwaukee Famous Has Made a Loser Out of Me.
Mm-hmm.
So he's obviously talking about
the Brewers.
That's right.
From 1968. Yep. And the number one song about Wisconsin is Porter Wagoner and Dolly Parton's Milwaukee, Here I Come.
I'm going to get on that old turnpike and I'm going to ride. I'm going to leave this town to you decide. Which one you want the most, them Opry stars or me? Milwaukee, here I come from Nashville, Tennessee. Milwaukee is where we were before we came here. Working in a brewery, making the finest beer.
On a payday night, said let's go to Tennessee.
So we came down to Nashville to the Grand Ole Opry. We were watching TV, Porter Wagoner was singing loud.
Yeah, 1969.
And that's back when Milwaukee was like a big deal. I mean, it was still one of the top 10 cities in America population wise. You had the breweries running full steam.
Mm-hmm.
It was really a top 10 city.
Yeah, I mean, population-wise.
I had no idea.
Yeah,
wow.
It was huge until a lot of the southern cities, Phoenix, and people started migrating down there.
Hmm.
It hasn't slipped as much as you think. It's still pretty high up there.
Well, there's the white flight from the city to... the metro area is actually still over a million, but everybody's moved out kind of to the suburbs. But yeah, those were the golden days, and I love Dolly Parton. She's such a badass, and I love her so much. I think it's a good song.
I'm going to mention that the replacement song, Treatment Bound, mentions Madison, too.
Ah.
Duluth to Madison, Treatment Bound. And they're coming down to Madison to play
the
show.
Did they get treatment in Madison? Got some good rehab centers here.
Yeah, probably.
There's obviously...
I wouldn't know about that.
Bon Iver songs mention Wisconsin as well. There's a Fountains of Wayne song. That road song that talks about being in Green Bay.
Yeah, it's a good one, too.
That's right.
That's the wheelhouse of Fountains of Wayne, like, in their prime. Remember that thing we read that, like, somebody claimed that they had the best streak of, like, five albums in a row of any artist of all time or something?
Yes.
Something like that.
That was their standard of greatness. Like, you're a truly great band if you can string together five albums in a row.
And then they mentioned Fountains of Wayne.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I can think of Utopia Parkway and Welcome Interstate Managers. Does anybody care about any other Fountains of Wayne albums?
The one or two after that were still pretty good.
And what are those called?
Exactly. Point taken.
You can't put me on the spot like that. Like, actually come up with the name? Come on. It's not fair. Okay. Oh, there's one more thing before we get to the... You know what's cool? Isn't it great how we can... delay the actual discussion of the music. I like that.
Mm-hmm.
I like that. Well, it's not the death of the week, but it's the death of a television show of the week.
Oh, yeah.
David Letterman. I think that David Letterman is worth mentioning.
I think so, too.
So this week, I didn't watch David Letterman for like 20 years until this week I decided to watch the last three episodes. And I was kind of a fan back in the heyday of the 80s. I thought that he was really pretty great.
He was great.
And I still always kind of just liked him in general, but I guess not enough to actually watch. A lot of people thought that his humor wore thin, and other people thought that he lost his edge for the last decade or so. But, you know, as it relates to music, there are a lot of good bands. Like, you know, the Raveonettes were on David Letterman. Like, a lot of indie rockers he had. He had Best Coast was on twice. I mean, I bet if we went through... every band that we've reviewed on this podcast, Have we figured out how many that is? How many podcasts have we done? A couple
well,
hundred?
Well, it's got to be up.
250
no, it's
at
like,
least.
Yeah, it's been 250 plus. I think it's heading up toward 280.
Wow.
So if you figure so we've done 500 bands with the duplicates, at least probably over 300. And I bet well more than half of those bands have actually played on Letterman.
Mm-hmm.
I'd be willing to bet.
Yeah, I mean, even ones that you know aren't the best known. Jeremy Messersmith played on Letterman.
Yeah.
I mean, so even little known ones have done it.
How about the Bob Dylan thing? Did you see that?
Yes.
The song was great, and he was actually trying to sing, which he doesn't always do. But afterwards, it was so awkward.
It was very awkward. Like almost everybody who did you see that, Chris?
No, I didn't.
Okay, like most bands, they'll play their song. And then Letterman walks up there and says, "Great job. That was awesome." And he shakes their hand, and they're always kind of humble and happy, and they shake his hand and they smile. Well, he walks up to Dylan. Dylan kind of walks off to the side and has this weird, like, dumbfounded look on his face. Like,
yeah.
I didn't get it.
He shook his hand like this, like, "Shake my hand like normal."
All right. We're shaking hands
now. You're trying to shake my normal, and I'll pull what he did.
All right.
Okay.
Just like that. He didn't grab it.
But then he kind of turned off to the side.
The weakest of handshakes.
And I don't know. I mean, I guess most people that are on there, who's so big that they wouldn't be like, "Holy shit, David Letterman." Well, you know, Bob Dylan is one.
Yeah.
But there's still, that's like people, basic politeness.
Yeah.
It was just really, really like, come on, dude.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. I, that.
Well, Chris, you must know who the very last musical guest was.
Oh, of course. It was Foo Fighters.
Right.
Which is Letterman's favorite band. Then they played his song, was it Everlong? It was his favorite song.
I know the song really well, but I don't know the title of it. It sounds
that was it, yeah.
And yeah. He
and they did a montage.
To that when he was recovering from his open heart surgery. Right.
They didn't show the band playing it, though. They just showed him starting to play it, and they used it as a backdrop of a montage.
Yeah, not my favorite Foo Fighters song, but if David Letterman likes it, he gets what he wants.
It's his favorite, apparently.
But yeah, I mean, it's a 33-year run of introducing music to the world, and I mean, I haven't been a fan of his for years, just because I think, you know, Kyle Smith of the New York Post actually, I think, put it well. During his early years, he was almost kind of the anti-comedy, where he was laughing at the system and kind of laughing at celebrity. Mm-hmm. And during the last few years, he just kind of became a part of the, you know, he'd have the famous people on and suck up to them and do all the stuff that he did. Whereas in the early days, it was just like, you know, something that we'd never seen before, and it was just crazy.
Yeah.
I liked him through his whole run, but, you know, I think that, you know, just like with REM, people are like, you know, I think that the IRS years were the best. They were. I think the NBC years were the best. But I never witnessed a period where I didn't think he was still more worthwhile to watch than anybody else.
It's funny you bring up REM, because one of the, you know, video clip that I still go back and visit every now and then is, you know, the first nationally televised appearance by REM was on David Letterman. When they played, and, you know, Michael Stipe had the shaggy hair, and I mean, he essentially plucked them out of nowhere to be on that show, and it just kind of shows that for, you know, three decades.
In the same theater where the Beatles played
the
Ed Sullivan show.
Ed Sullivan Theater.
And it's going to be the same theater where Stephen Colbert is going to have the show that replaces Letterman. Hopefully he'll keep doing music, you know, musical
guests.
You would
think so.
Yeah, he probably will.
Yeah, he's pretty good about that. I mean, he has, like, Colbert, even though he didn't have a musical show or a regular guest, he'd have like the Decemberists on and other bands and stuff. So, yeah.
That's promising.
I hope they don't call it Late Night with Stephen Colbert.
It's the late show, right?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Late Night was the NBC. I hope they don't call it. I think just let that. That's gone. That was David Letterman.
Give it a new name, you think?
Give it a whole new name.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No?
So if you're listening out there, CBS.
Yeah. They probably are. Well, it's probably at least 10 or 15 executives from CBS list. And not every single one of them, but a lot of them would be listening to us.
Like the talent scouts or whatever that, you know, I'm sure they have to go out and try to find.
They might want one of us as the show's narrator. Like the Alan Coulter guy on David Letterman, right?
What are we going to do? We got to be like, remember on, was that on the Brady Bunch where Greg was in a band? And then they went to the studio to audition, and they're like, "Yeah, you guys are real heavy, man, real swell." But then they just wanted Greg, and he's like, "No way, these are my peeps."
They need to have all three of us in that studio, yeah, and then we'll start each show with just like 1 minute of random banter.
Yeah,
and then
we're gonna stick together.
Absolutely, yeah.
Can't break us apart like
that's
that.
That's right.
Greg's band was named Johnny Bravo, by the
yeah.
way.
Yeah. And he wore an electric guitar with one of those those tiny, tiny little amps that you just like hang around your neck.
Yes.
Yep. Johnny Bravo.
Wow. You guys have a better.
Isn't there a new band, like a contemporary band called Johnny Bravo, I think?
There could be. It would not
probably
surprise me.
Probably is. Yeah. Yep.
Letterman's greatest gift, though, I think, was doing comedy where everything seemed like an inside joke. Like the joke was on the guest or on somebody else, and it felt like only you and he knew like what he was really talking about.
Right.
Even though everybody did, it kind of felt special to you.
Yeah.
And, you know, these clueless guests. And I think that's kind of what The Daily Show does, too, when they go out and interview people, that these people are completely clueless.
Right.
And they're like, they don't know that they're being messed with.
Right.
And I think that was his gift.
Yep. All right. That was good. That was a good tribute to David Letterman.
Thanks. Thanks for the recap.
Yes. I might have to delete this because it won't be interesting. But have you ever noticed that Jim Rome, do you ever listen to his interviews? Like, I haven't listened to him in like 6 months, but every once in a while I'll hear him interview somebody. And every time he interviews somebody, he finishes the interview and he says how great the interview
yes,
was.
Yes, that was.
What a great interview
that was.
That
was epic.
Yeah.
It's like,
epic interview. Yeah. That was an all-timer.
Thanks for letting us know how great your interview
yeah,
you just
he
did.
He always says that. The other thing is anytime somebody, the callers on that just made me sick. They're like, they got this thing written out and they'll like blow through it and then he'll go, rack them.
Exactly.
They're trying to imitate him, you know, and they have no capacity for independent thought.
Yeah.
Do you ever
watch? They'll be like, blah, 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 and at the end, like, war, Jim Rome, war, Will's Band of the Week, you know? Like,
Do you ever watch
I haven't listened to that
Inside Amy Schumer?
I keep hearing about that lately. No, I've never seen it.
It's occasionally really, really funny, and last week she had a skit about when you're done having sex with a guy, there are certain guys that will, like, start talking to you about the sex that they just had. And she calls them the recappers.
Oh, God.
So you have sex, and then you're sitting there laying there, and then he's like, "Hey, you remember just now when I was like touching your butt and stuff?" She's like, "Oh God, stop! don't like relive the whole
recappers.
Thing."
Recappers.
Oh man.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, music. How about that?
Wait, we better save this podcast first. We'll be right back right after this from our sponsors.
Him. So yeah, now we got the we're not rolling right now.
We're rolling, Barry.
Oh, okay. Well, I was gonna say that we gotta drop a commercial in there
for what?
Go back to edit.
Epic.
The
Stiegel.
Problem is we've had so many applications for sponsorship that we haven't decided who gets it yet. So that's why we left it blank there. So, speaking of Bob Dylan, there's a new Tallest Man on Earth album.
Oh, wow, look at that nice. Segue.
And,
is he tall?
He's not tall. He just decided to call himself that. I think he's just thinking, average height. But the
I
calling
meant
your band...
I meant Bob Dylan.
Oh, okay. But if you called your band the average height guy,
yes.
That's kind of boring, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, I think his name is Christian Mattson. And that's not quite your name, because it's with a K.
With a K, sure.
And he's from Sweden. And he's
so
good.
You're from Wisconsin, so
Chris is
another thing.
He's different. American through and through.
Plus, we're different people, which is a consideration as well.
Mm-hmm.
And he can play the guitar, and I cannot.
You
well,
did that,
he doesn't have a podcast, does he?
You did
to hell with him.
Yeah.
Somewhere on the internet, there's Chris doing a Bob Mould cover with his Strat.
And my dad watched it.
He did.
And he hated it.
He's like, "Chris,
my dad
down."
Like, yeah. My dad trolled me. He's like, "Sounds like you like playing the same thing over and over again, don't you?" I'm like, "Dad, if anybody on earth should be supportive."
Yeah, come on, man.
It would be you.
We need to have your dad on here sometimes as the New Orleans Bureau.
Yeah.
Just listen to something.
We should.
We'll just keep playing the same thing over and over again.
What would he have us play? Like Bing Crosby or something? Or what would it be?
My dad was really into the Righteous Brothers.
Okay. Sorry.
Loved the Righteous Brothers. Let's see. Loved Simon and Garfunkel.
Well, that's good.
This is funny because I always thought of my, you know, you think of your parents as the squarest people on earth. You're such a square, Dad. And then I went to my grandma's house and she had this box of his old stuff. And I'm going through it, flipping through old photos. And out of it dropped this, like the Bob Dylan fan club card, like the official card that they send you when you join the fan club. I'm like, oh my God. And there was a Rolling Stones one too.
Wow. Okay. Well, that's pretty cool.
I'm like, that's, wait, my there's no possibility my dad could actually be cool.
Yeah. Well, I guess.
So, yeah.
People surprise you sometimes.
He was cool, but like pretended he wasn't.
Right.
As opposed to, you know, these days where people pretend they're cool.
So you take after your dad? what if your dad
Wait a minute,
was
what are you saying?
I'm not even sure. what if your dad was going to be on the podcast and he got to suggest the artists?
My dad?
Yep.
You know, he's a classical music guy.
Okay.
If you want some pop, you go with my mom. And she's got a good pop sensibility. And for somebody who's over 80 years old, she likes Coldplay. She likes the Flaming Lips.
Wow.
She likes Neil Young.
Can you
Young.
Tell us about an uncle or something that really liked the Flaming Lips?
Right, yeah. My uncle liked the Flaming Lips a lot. Yeah. Now, I had to introduce him to them. He would never have heard of them. But he was like, holy shit, this is pretty awesome. Yeah. Yeah. All right. The Tallest Man on Earth has a new album, and we have to somehow get to talking about this. It's called Dark Bird is Home, and I'm going to get this rolling by playing a track. Let's go with Darkness of the Dream. That's The Tallest Man on Earth.
That was my first pick, too. I like that song quite a bit.
Well, then I better pick before I pick your next one.
Yeah, do it.
We have to talk a little bit before we pick the next track.
Yeah. Will's the big Tallest Man on Earth fan here, so I feel like I am. You should kind of recap the album here for us.
Yeah, it's his fourth album, and it's not really that different. I think it's got a little bit more instrumentation. They're probably more tracks recorded on this. It's more layered than some of his previous stuff, but it's not really different musically. And I think you could even accuse him of being a little bit formulaic, except I really still like the formula a lot. So you know, it's kind of a, it's almost like the songs are a little bit predictable, but I don't know, for me, in a good way, I like it.
See, now I could not disagree with you more. That I think it sounds completely different than his last. I mean, the thing that drew me to his first couple of albums was the fact that they were so spare, and that there was virtually no instrumentation other than he's an amazing guitar player, and that's what I liked so much about it. So when you say, like, this new one's formulaic, I mean, it's I don't think it's anything like his past ones, right?
I'm kind of thinking the chord changes. Like, you almost know what chord is coming next and, like, the direction he's going to go with the whole feel of the song. I guess that's how I feel about it.
That part I'll agree with you on. And back to Chris's critique of Will's criticism. The first thing that Chris, or that Will said, rather, was that there's, you know, noticeably more instruments, more tracks recorded. And that's, you said that on the way over here.
Yeah.
So you agree there, right?
Well, he said...
But then the formulaic thing, I'm going to say, I know exactly what Will's talking about. In fact, remember the song Trouble Will Be Gone from a couple albums ago?
Mm-hmm.
The first song sounds exactly like that. It's like kind of weird. And so when I heard the first song on this album, I thought, this guy hasn't really come up with any new tricks here, but the rest of it I really like. But did you notice that similarity at all? Or I'll pick that as my song.
We're going with track one.
Oh wow,
that's radical.
A podcast no, but
I know.
Well, it's a good one. I think it's worthy. It's called Fields of Our Home.
So you honestly believe in me, though I wake up every night. And I've been dreaming of a second rut, while the first one leave your eye. What if you fields of her home, always rumors of a flaming town. Not my parents ever trained, just a part of what we do out here. Subtle, early, vicious, late.
Say while that was playing, we were all out of beers and Chris started getting kind of panicky.
Yeah,
I noticed.
I was motioning towards my mouth.
Yeah, and he was about to go down. That was he would. Whoa. I don't know if we could have
the last
recovered.
5 seconds has just been really awkward. I was motioning towards my mouth, and you were about to go down. So this is not that type of podcast.
Anyway. I went into the kitchen, and Will's wife was there and gave us these three glasses to split this last beer. She gave me this nice, pretty big one, and you guys these little tiny ones.
Yeah, well, yeah. You get favoritism.
We'll do a shot of beer.
My wife likes Barrett. He gets favored status.
These are from the Capital Brewery. Those are kind of nice little glasses.
Yeah, they're cool, aren't they? They're like the sampler glasses.
Hold it at an angle, and I'll pour some beer.
If you get that thing where you get, what, like 6 different beers in like 4-ounce glasses.
Oh yeah. Oops. I'm sorry.
Oh my God.
All over the Neve mixer.
We spilled just a little on the Neve mixer there, but
hopefully it's built to spill.
Oh. Hey. Hey, they're playing on Tuesday, right?
Yes. Same night as St. Vincent, which I might have tickets to. So yeah, that's a tough call.
Embarrassment of riches. Now really, admit it, that's really cool. right? You got those artists performing the same night, like a mile away from us.
Yes.
That's good, right?
Yeah.
That is. How many good, people yeah. can good say Madison. That? Yeah.
Yeah. Not, they can't say that in Green Bay.
Why I mean, aren't... We should be really more famous, right? I mean, we're right in the thick of things. This is as good as Brooklyn, right?
Who do you think is playing Come in on. Salzburg on Tuesday,
I was
right?
going to say, the Salzburg shows are always the best.
Probably like a Mozart cover band. He's born in Salzburg.
Wait, isn't everybody a Mozart cover band at this point? What, like Mozart's going to play?
Well... Yeah.
They're like, all cover band. Yeah. Like every orchestra is a cover band.
Oh, this is just a cover.
Yeah. Oh, man. Exactly.
Yep.
I like a lot of Rachmaninoff's early stuff.
Okay. Yeah. For a while sure. ago, we played a song by The Tallest Man on Earth. And that one was good, too.
Yeah. So
when Chris was leading into kind of easing us into his opinion on this.
Yeah. When I first listened to this, I wasn't all that impressed just because I'd liked him so much the way he was before with virtually no instrumentation or just spare. And I was like, I mean, he's so good at what he did before, but I guess at some point you have to, you know, three albums of just you playing the guitar is probably enough. And he had to morph into something, but I'm like, you know. What so impressed me about him was his guitar playing, and when he moves into full instrumentation, kind of like Iron and Wine did, like can he hack it with, you know, kind of in that genre?
Yeah.
And this album's growing on me.
Yeah,
we'll put it that way.
I'd agree. Real quickly on that.
Please, go on.
On Iron and Wine, that last album is just totally horse shit.
You think so?
Yeah. Whenever it comes out at the coffee shop, I'm just like, what is this? I want to take it off. I can't even believe that it's him.
So it just accidentally comes on in the coffee shop sometime?
Well, somebody will play it.
All right.
You know, they'll think, oh, I like Iron and Wine. I'll put this on. Oops. Wrong one.
I don't think I listened to it enough to even remember.
Yeah, see, I actually like that one better than the couple he did before that.
All right. Well, shows what you know.
We can all agree that this heyday was like 2006, right?
Mm-hmm. 2001.
Maybe, yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
Okay.
Maybe Tallest Man on Earth is doing like a bizarro Bruce Springsteen type thing where all of Bruce Springsteen's albums are full on rock band type thing. Except for Nebraska. So he'll be the opposite. There are all these spare folky things, and then one band one, and then...
Yeah, go back to the folky stuff.
Or like Damien Jurado did that same thing.
Yeah.
I Break Chairs was like this attempt at something different. So,
Chris, do you have a pick?
Yeah, I'll play a song. I'll play the song, and I don't even know how to say it. It's S-A-G-R-E-S, Sagers, Sagers?
Let's go with Sagers.
Sagers? All right, let's play that then.
To where the world ended, red or
tallest man on earth. The album is called Dark Bird Is Home. And I guess before we finish this discussion, we should pose the question, is it better or worse than Bob Dylan? I think it's better, but you guys probably disagree.
I thought that we went like right after that infamous episode that you sort of admitted, oh boy, that was the dumbest thing I ever said. But now like, you're doubling down on it.
I feel like Barrett and I have ridiculed you to the point where I rarely feel bad about making fun of you.
And now, see, now I have like confidence of my opinion.
And I kind of felt bad about making fun of you. I'm like, I think we've kind of overplayed that a little bit. But now that you just said it again.
Yeah.
That little
fire was like dying down, and then he just dumped a gallon of gasoline
out. It was just embers, and now. Yeah.
Well, let me ask Barrett this question. What do you like better, this album or the average Rolling Stones album?
I can honestly say I don't know any Rolling Stones albums as well as I know this.
Okay, see, so you probably would pick this.
Except for, like, seriously.
Like Exile on Main Street.
Yeah, no, I haven't listened to that many times.
Hmm. Yeah, so you never took
the
time.
There's songs on that I never heard.
Yeah.
Are we going to have to
the
do
only
like
one
them?
I know is Tattoo You, really. That's sad.
Yeah, I guess my only point is music is totally subjective, right? And I would never, given the choice between a Bob Dylan album and a Tallest Man on Earth album, I would always pick the Tallest Man on Earth album. But that's just my personal taste, you know?
Yeah. That was a good question you posed to me.
Yeah, he kind of went after you.
He did.
I did. We got to find
his
some
opinion is still dumb.
Are we going to have to do like
I didn't
There's got to be some famous artist Chris doesn't
well,
like.
Well, like, you know, I'd rather listen to, you know, Echo and the Bunnymen than Cole Porter. You know, what does that say?
Yeah, okay. Well,
you know, but I wouldn't say that they're better.
Yeah.
That's what you did.
Well, then I used
that's
the wrong
That's where
words.
You were wrong.
All right. That's fine. I'll go along with that. That's not the right way to phrase it.
But you said that you like to pick on Will. I am always... I don't...
No, I said I don't like don't, to.
Or you don't... Usually you would like to, but you're starting to feel bad. You're starting to feel bad because of the volume of it.
Yes, normally I wouldn't feel bad about it.
I like to pick on you. Now I've learned to pick on Nicholas because he likes it. But I don't really pick on Will as much. I don't know why.
Yeah.
But it feels kind of good.
You feel sorry for me.
When he does something so, so dumb.
Yeah. Well, let me ask this question. I'm going to delve into this just a little bit deeper. Suppose Bob Dylan, his lyrics were just average. You know, just okay. Not stupid lyrics, but just, you know, just nothing really remarkable. Just musically, would you say that he's brilliant?
Yes.
Yeah. You think, like, it just seems to me like, you know, like a Rolling Stone, and it's pretty basic music, right?
But you can't...
I think he's really huge because of his cultural significance.
Right. You can't just take Bob Dylan, pluck him out of 1960, 1961, place him today and say, first of all, because he's been imitated so many times... You look back and you're like, oh, well, that's all been done before. And so he's just like part of this genre instead of, you know, he and Woody Guthrie kind of starting this genre. But, I mean, you have to place him in, you know, the era of civil rights, the Vietnam War, and all the kind of stuff that he was singing about, and kind of how brave it was for him to kind of sing about this stuff at the time. So,
right.
I mean, it's you can't separate him from, you know, his ecosystem, really.
Right. That's all true. Right. But I would... There's that aspect to it, for sure. Just like you can't, you know, if, like, I saw her standing there was all of a sudden, like, on the radio, people would be like, what's that? You know, so...
Is that Fountains of Wayne?
Yeah.
I think it is.
It's like the basketball argument of, like, Bill Russell. So you take Bill Russell, put him in today's NBA, he's probably a pretty good power forward. I mean, he's 6'9". You know, he's got some moves. But would he be as dominant as he was back in 1960? You know, 65 through 68
no,
or whatever.
No, for sure not.
He would not be.
He'd be funnier, though, and a cooler guy than a lot of people.
Put Cy Young on the Brewers.
Right.
Right?
You can only measure people against their peers and, like, during their era.
Right.
Yeah.
What if
Bear's going to say that Kyle Loesch is better than Cy Young.
Well, of course he is.
I think he probably is.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
I think
you know who else
right.
was, like, Jeff Suppan was better
than Cy Young.
Yes,
you oh, know, that's great.
And like Adam Lind is better than Babe Ruth.
I was going to say, of all the people that I think would stand the test of time, I think Babe Ruth is probably one of them.
One thing you have to consider, though, when you
think the high in home runs before Babe Ruth came around was like 13 by Home Run Baker. They gave him the name Home Run because he hit 13.
Wait, you're kidding. It was like the record was 13 and then he hit 60?
And Babe Ruth hit 60.
They didn't have steroids either.
Right. He ate hot dogs.
Oh, Mike. Yeah, that's right.
That was my beer. So maybe he's Adam Lind isn't better than Babe Ruth.
Yeah.
But, wow. You know, I don't think that Babe Ruth would stand out today at all. You know?
Yeah, I mean, is he better than Albert Pujols, or is he better than?
Of course not.
Is he better than Gorman Thomas? That's a better comparison.
Oh, that is.
Yeah.
But I don't know.
Okay,
but yes, it's all timing and context, and I don't think you can separate Bob Dylan. I mean, just basically musically. I mean, I still think he's great, but I don't know.
Yeah, I think I do think that, you know. The other point I was going to make is that I think the music is really great. And you brought up like a Rolling Stone. That's just kind of a cliche song that when you think about that song, you think of like, you know, like Ringo Starr and the All-Star Band, like a bunch of people up there just playing this dirge like version of it. But in general, I think his music is electrifying and exciting. All right, let's move on.
Okay, last word. Okay.
We're back. You know what he just did? He racked it.
You're racking. Okay. Epic. That was one of the most epic takes I've ever heard about Bob Dylan. Thank you, Barrett.
Yes.
War Bob Dylan. War Wolf Band of the Week. Yeah, talk about people like Felix having no idea what, because he mentioned he didn't know anything about football or baseball.
What a terrible cultural reference. Yeah,
what
bad.
Is he going to know about Jim Rome?
Nothing.
You guys are better not to
Let's just tell him. He's this guy who yells every day on the radio about sports.
Idiot.
Yeah. Okay. There's a new Surfer Blood album, and Surfer Blood is kind of, you know, we go way back with Surfer Blood. The first Surfer Blood album actually brought on the comparison to 38 Special, and the rest
was
history.
That's right.
So the first, now Chris is going to talk about this way more intelligently than me, so I'll just get my couple words out here.
I don't know about that.
The first album was kind of diverse. It had some kind of Vampire Weekend-y beats and stuff, and not in a bad way, in kind of a good way. It was kind of interesting. It was like, where's this band going to go? And then their second album was like this ridiculously poppy thing that for me was off-putting, but then it was pretty good at being ridiculously poppy, so I ended up thinking it was pretty decent. And now here we have the third one. Called 1,000 Palms. So, Chris, tell us about it.
Oh, wow. I'm on the spot here. I still go back and listen to their second album quite a bit. And their first album, I think, was good. The second one, I think, was a natural progression, though. I think they got better with their second. This one, I like, but it's a step back in... It's far more laid back. It's more relaxed. And I like that. But it's, I don't know, it's not as catchy, it's not as kind of hard driving as their last album was, which I liked a lot. So, it's still good. Let me pick out a song and people can listen to what I'm talking about. Let's go with Point of No Return.
That was a Kansas song. Except they spelled no, K-N-O-W. Remember that?
Oh, wow, man.
What? Look at that.
Freak it out.
Surfer Blood.
Yeah, so I think if there's a theme for the band that bands that we've been talking about tonight, it's bands getting into their third, fourth albums and kind of tiring of their old style and kind of moving into a new one. So it's really a podcast of transitions tonight, Will.
It is. Yeah, and what's interesting, too, is bands do this, and sometimes even if the band is happy with the direction they're going, the fans don't follow all the time, right? That's tricky, right?
Yeah. They want to hear the hits. They want to hear what they grew to love.
Yeah. We talked about this a little bit with Best Coast in the Lost podcast, and I talked about it a little bit in the Replacement podcast about how they did a similar musical style, but they kind of amped up the recording to try to make it different. But Surfer Blood, the recording is pretty much the same as the past ones, right? There's no like radical change of sound.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I've got a pick. I thought that this track was pretty catchy. It's track two called Island. Surfer Blood. From?
They're from Florida. They're from, like, Jacksonville, right? They're from somewhere in Florida.
West
That's
Palm Beach.
That's where 38 Special's from.
It is. No, I think they're from West Palm Beach.
Yeah. They're from Florida.
Yep. Yeah, that's obviously they grew up listening to 38 Special.
As we all did.
Yeah, right. We didn't.
Barrett, you haven't given us any thoughts on this new Surfer Blood album.
I haven't listened to it. You know, I threw myself all the way into the other one, and I guess I'll say about this that it's very recognizable as Surfer Blood.
Yep.
That's my comment. And when I don't listen to something, I always just pick number seven. Let's hear track number seven.
You know, if a band can't come up with a good track number seven, then they're just not worthy, right?
Yeah, exactly. That should be the litmus test? Track number two, or track number one of side two, right?
Yeah.
Well, track seven is usually going to be like track two of side two.
Yeah, unless you're Godspeed You Black Emperor, in which case it's track two of side one.
No, so I mean 12 and 13 is a really average number of songs. So
sure.
Okay, track
I'm
seven.
I'm sticking by what I said.
It's called Covered Wagons.
Ribbons cut with rusty blades. Just a
not a lot of references to Conestoga wagons in music that we talk about.
No.
During that 2 minutes, I actually thought about your theory about song sevens, and I like it. I think I'm on board.
Okay.
Yeah, that's a very good concept.
Yeah, put it this way. If a band can put a solid song at song seven on an album, then it's a good album.
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't you pack them all towards mm-hmm. the front? Mm-hmm. I mean, think of how many albums you've listened to where like song six on is just kind of what they throw in at the end.
Right.
And you're doing the tracking, and you want to make it strong for the first three or four.
Right.
And you also want it to end well. But it's kind of like, imagine like running 400 meters, right? It's that third lap that's really tough, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I should say you're running like the metric mile.
I don't exercise, so I don't know what you're talking about.
You're running like a 1600 meters on a 400 meter track, right? You're running four laps, right?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Okay? You can blast it out that first lap, and you can gut it out that last lap. But the third one, that's the tough one.
That's
track seven.
That's where I usually stop for a sandwich.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Lap three.
So like, I think, you know what, I had a brilliant thought. And we started this in 2009.
This podcast?
Yeah, so we're almost like 6 years in. It might be a little late, but...
I thought you meant this one.
No, we should have called this podcast Track 7.
Ooh.
That's a great name for the podcast, right? Is it too late to change it?
It is not.
Nope.
It is not, actually.
We could. Should we change it?
Let's go back and look at some famous track sevens.
Yeah, let's see what the listeners think.
What's track seven on OK Computer?
Track seven. Will's band of the track seven?
What's track
just
seven?
Track seven. The track seven the podcast,
what's
right?
Track seven on Abbey Road.
Polythene Pam. Let's see. I don't know. I'll just threw that out.
That's too hard. I can't look this all up now.
I know.
You're hitting me with too many ideas at once.
We're throwing too much at you.
Yeah.
Track seven of the great albums, and you'll see why they're great albums, I think.
Yeah. I've always said that track two is usually the best song. I mean, you take all track twos, that's the winner there.
Especially since so many albums have the intro.
Right. They have the intro.
To set you up.
Or they have track one is what the record company exec thinks you need to hit them with an energetic thing. And then the song that they really love, that's track two.
All right, I'm going to just look. This is track seven of Adam and the Ants classic Prince Charming.
This is the first thing Barrett thinks of.
Mile High Club. I got to say, that's not supporting our theory at all. But let's look at some...
Maybe it's not supporting the album. That doesn't mean our theory's wrong.
Yeah. Let me go on to some other ones here. You guys can keep talking while I do this. Revolver. She said.
Huh.
Right?
I would say that's one of the stronger songs on the album.
Can't Buy Me Love.
That's a decent song.
It's a good song.
Could we just fade it out while you're talking about this? You know how some of those talk shows, they do a fade out going to the commercial?
Yes.
Yeah, I think it's time to sign off.
How about
off.
Tapestry?
Oh, that's a good one. Check that one.
You've Got a Friend.
Really? That's track seven?
Seven, wow.
Mm-hmm.
Solid.
Did you like Google great track sevens?
No, I'm just looking at...
what's on your...
Yeah.
All right.
We'll talk to you again next week with another edition.
By the way, track seven on Yankee Hotel Foxtrot, heavy metal drummer.
Wow.
Okay.
Yeah,
that's
see?
Solid. What's track seven on Turn on the Bright Lights by Interpol? Let's look that up.
That's the album you thought of?
Yes.
Okay, what's track seven on Kraftwerk's The Man Machine? Track question, seven. There's only six songs.
I knew that.
You knew that. Nice.
There's only six songs on what's their album? The Home Computer.
Computer World.
Computer World,
yeah.
Nice. I didn't know that you liked Kraftwerk.
Oh, I do.
Yeah. Do you know Autobahn?
Yes.
Everybody knows
so
Autobahn.
So awesome. Oh, my God.
Autobahn got U.S. radio airplay.
I'm the operator of my pocket calculator.
I actually knew that song. Okay, you guys, we got to sign off. Listeners are just dying right now. Assuming we're still recording, which we don't really know.
This was fueled by a lot of Salzburg beer.
All right. Not even very much, really.
One more?
Song seven on that stupid U2 album that nobody wanted that we all had to get for free.
Yes.
Yeah.
Raised by Wolves. Which maybe nobody's ever heard that song.
Yeah, well, nobody heard the album.
I know. Yeah. Anyway, okay, I'll stop now.
What about 38
the
special.
Best of 38 special.
Oh, yeah. Track 7 on, like, Wild-Eyed Southern Boys. That's going to be a classic.
I got to find it. What's it the one is? That has, like, Hold On Loosely on it?
No, that's the album. The one with, like, the woman with the silk shorts on.
They don't have
on
it on Spotify.
Hmm. Chris, can't you just look at your iTunes and it'll have it on there?
It'll have 38 special on there?
Yeah.
I actually don't have them, the MP3s, on my iTunes.
I guess when you've listened to the vinyl for so long, to listen to something of lesser quality is kind of tough. Such a stone-cold classic.
Here we go. Well, track 7 on the Wild-Eyed Southern Boys album by 38 Special is called Honky Tonk Dancer.
That's a good one, right?
They're all good, right?
Of course. I think they might be playing at the Seymour County Fair this summer, so we can know.
That's such an obscure track, I can't even find it. Oh, well. All right, you guys, it's been fun. We might have recorded this podcast.
Yeah.
So if we did...
There's a 10% chance this might actually make it to the internet.
We know that two-thirds of it is...
Two-thirds of it is saved.
Yeah.
It might be we'll play two-thirds of it, and then I'll just ramble
for
a while.
That's probably all anybody really wants.
Yeah, it's all they need. Yep. Okay, thanks, guys. It's been fun. We have about 10 bands in the queue waiting for their dream of being on the Will's Band of the Week podcast.
It's like being on the cover of the Rolling Stone, just kind of updated for the podcast age.
Can you imagine being, like, notified that you're about to be put on the cover, and then, oh, sorry, you got bumped, you know? Michael Jackson got put on ahead of you.
Yeah.
You're done.
Is that why we never tell what we're going to do the next week?
Yes, because we don't want to crush any dreams. Exactly.
All these bands are sitting there waiting.
Yeah.
Yep. What's great is we can just ramble on as long as we want. Like, if this were a commercial podcast, we'd have, like, a limit. We'd have, like, what would we have? We'd have, like...
Cut us off in mid-sentence.
We'd have, like, 42 minutes and the other 18 would be sold out with ads, right?
Right.
And here we're just, like, rambling on, and we don't care. It's great. It's free form.
That's great, but I gotta pee. Let's move this along.
All right, we'll talk to you again next week with another edition of Will's Band of the Week. Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
You can subscribe to the Will's Band of the Week podcast using iTunes or any other podcast app. All of our podcasts are also available directly on our webpage, willsband.net. You can contact us directly by email to willsband@yahoo.com, on our Facebook page, or on Twitter @WillsBand. The Will's Band of the Week podcast is brought to you every week from Fourth Bedroom Studios in Madison, Wisconsin. Our theme music was composed by Grant and performed by Grant and Will. Thanks for listening.